Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Merry Christmas and hello. This is the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com, and we are the Internet's longest ongoing celebration of Christmas with the world's greatest Christmas community. My name is Jeff Westover, and I'm the lead movie critic at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we have been discussing Christmas movies for nearly the entirety of our existence, which is pretty dang long because we're pushing 30 years at My Merry Christmas, and, well, we're starting to push it kind of hard. It's interesting to me how things evolve with Christmas Online. When we began, we rode the wave of make-your-own-website-for-free stuff at places like GeoCities. Our first website was at such a place because what did we, a ragtag group of Christmas crazies, really know about this new thing called the Internet? We were just one of many Christmas destinations filled with blinking gifts and links to anything we could think of. The next big thing around that time in Christmas Online was getting music and a chat on a little site called Yahoo. Then came YouTube and sharing classic Christmas videos, and soon it turned to blogs of all kinds, and the rage now is all in podcasting Christmas. At the forefront of it all when it comes to Christmas has been Christmas movies. No matter what age in the Internet we're talking about, Christmas movies has been there for whatever reason. It's always been a hot topic. It's really something. You can find just this year alone about 150 Christmas podcasts overall, and it seems more and more are coming out every day. And what's the primary subject most of those podcasts like to talk about? Well, it's Christmas movies. Well, I love Christmas movies as much as the next person, but honestly, does the world need another Christmas movie podcast? I seriously have to ask that. What's going on right now with everything kind of reminds me of the years around 1997 to 1999, when there was an explosion of Christmas websites that hit the Internet, and there was a season of just a sea of, well, too much of the same stuff about Christmas Online, if you can believe that. It was a little bit of a problem because after a while you have all of these voices more or less saying the same thing, and it got stale. Today, far, far too many Christmas podcasts focus on movies and television shows of Christmas, but they don't really focus on Christmas at the end of the day. And way too many of them tie their sleigh to Hallmark. Now, I know that's an unpopular thing to say, but I'm not running for president. I'm just calling it as I see it. And there's something about what's going on right now with Christmas podcasts that makes me feel like we've seen this before. Now, I'm not dissing anybody who wants to launch a Christmas podcast and talk about what they're passionate about. And I get it that a lot of people are passionate about Christmas movies and it's a part of their Christmas. But why are there so many podcasts about Christmas movies and TV shows and so few about, say, the sacred Christmas or Christmas decorating or even Christmas music or Christmas lights or, doggone it, even our own little love of Christmas history? I just don't understand it. Are movies and TV shows really what people think Christmas is? Is that as far as people can go when it comes to Christmas, to talk about something that already gets talked about a lot? Is it because it's a safe topic? Is it because Christmas nostalgia anymore has to be tied to old movies and television shows of Christmas past? I guess maybe because I'm not cut from the same cloth as a generation now that has grown up with podcasts. It's still an emerging media, this thing called podcasting, but it is, to me, just another huge addition to a very, very large ocean of media that we consume about Christmas. And podcasting swallows up Christmas by focusing so much on movies and TV shows. I bring all this up because in this episode, we're going to delve into something I've avoided for a long time. We're going to talk about Christmas movies, and I really don't want to do it. Honestly, there are podcasts out there that specialize in this stuff, and while I can't listen to many of them because it's just not my thing, I don't mind telling you that they are a million times better at this than I am. And this episode, I fear, will prove that in a big way. But more than anything else, I don't want to put out a podcast episode about Christmas movies that's going to be the same old thing. So let's just say that what we're about to do is going to be memorable. Now, I know I'm going to get a lot of people who disagree with me. That's what's great about talking about movies or anything creative. But when they disagree, they will send me hate mail. That's the beautiful thing about the internet, especially in an election year. JimBob@gmail.com is so anonymous and so safe behind his lack of a face that he will boldly say things to me in response to a podcast that he would never say to my face, even with a mask on. Second, what else are you really to do about talking movies in a podcast? At the end of the day, a critic is just sharing an opinion, right? And everyone knows opinions are like Christmas trees. Everybody's got one. You see, in the world of podcast episodes, there are some that just go away and you never hear anything about them again. And there are other episodes that, for whatever reason, get listened to and they never stop gaining reactions. One such episode for us was one I did 2 years ago titled Awful, No Good, Very Bad Christmas Music, where I more or less destroyed a few famous artists for their Christmas music. You know, I'm no music critic any more than I'm a movie critic. But let's face it, I'm a Christmas nut, and that makes me qualified in a small degree to at least put my toe in the waters of Christmas movies and music and opine about them on my podcast, like a billion other Christmas podcasts out there. But that episode gets reactions, great and not so great, continually. And I've learned many, many years ago not to get too wound up by what people send to me in their messages. Some, after all, get offended at the dumbest things. My favorite hate mail is when I get emails in April trying to shame me for putting out a Christmas podcast. Some people just have too much time on their hands, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I try not to offend anyone, and yet one particular sad fact about the internet is that someone's going to flame you for nothing, simply because it's on the internet and they think it's cool to be a troll. Behind their screens and keyboards and made-up usernames, there are people out there who frankly get mighty uppity behind the anonymity they think they have online. But that episode of the Merry Podcast generates a lot more than just hate mail. Most that comes in, and I get a few dozen responses from that episode every month, is that they think it's funny and that I should do something similar with Christmas movies. So here we are, talking really bad Christmas movies that are classics that I'm going to destroy right here on the Merry Little Podcast. It's funny, I didn't feel nervous about doing that with the music episode, but why do I feel that way with this one? Well, I plead in advance that you forgive me for what I'm about to do.
Susan, call a doctor.
Oh, please don't do that, sir. It's probably just a small internal muscular hemorrhage, sir. It'll be all right.
You'll feel better if we take you someplace where you can be comfortable.
Yes, sir.
Let's just go back in here and you can watch the television.
Oh, but sir.
Well, I'm going to call the doctor.
Oh, please, sir. Don't bother. If you'll just help me back to the bungalow, I'm sure I'll be all right.
White Christmas, the movie, was made right in the heart of the most golden era of Christmas in history, 1954. The movie itself was the idea of Irving Berlin, who wrote the song White Christmas more than a decade before. Berlin's opinion of the whole White Christmas theme back when he wrote the song was that he knew he had a winner. He told his secretary quite famously that it was the best song ever written. Well, we've talked about the song White Christmas before. There is simply nothing out there in Christmas music before or since to match its recorded success. Long before White Christmas, the movie, was ever made, the song made history and achieved a level of love rarely seen in the Christmas universe. The movie saw no small amount of success either. In 1954 dollars, it was more than $30 million that it raked in, which would make it a blockbuster in today's money. And it's true, White Christmas was seemingly beloved of fans and critics alike in 1954. And that love has continued. When it was released to video in 1986, it set records. Each subsequent video release has done pretty well as well. But the time has come to tell some truth about White Christmas. White Christmas, the song, is amazing. But White Christmas, the movie, well, it sucks. That's right, kids, I said it. For 66 years, people have avoided seeing it, and I'm not shy in bringing it to light in our day. In fact, I would say that if the movie was not about Christmas and did not feature the song White Christmas, people would have forgotten about it long ago. After all, a Christmas musical should have how many songs about Christmas? This musical has a whopping 16 numbers, and only one of them is about Christmas. Now, you know I love the argument about Die Hard being a Christmas movie. White Christmas is a good example of why people call Die Hard a Christmas movie. There's simply way more Christmas to be found in a violent action film like Die Hard than there is in a classic Christmas movie known as White Christmas. And the story? Where is the story in White Christmas? Well, they knew at the time that it was produced that the story was not very good. The script was famously rewritten several times, with one of the writers saying, quote, "Writing that movie was the worst experience of my life. Norman Krasna was a talented man, but it was the lousiest story I'd ever heard. It needed a brand new story, one that made sense," unquote. I don't think they succeeded. What they came up with was a story that never made sense, at least in terms of Christmas. But does any of that really matter? No, just as long as those doors to the Vermont Inn open to glorious Christmas snowfall behind a cast wearing that Christmas red of royalty while singing White Christmas, that's all that seems to matter to people. Of course, like other classic Christmas movies, this one suffers in the climate of today's sensibilities. The minstrel number would never be made today, for example, and certainly wouldn't be put on film. And then there's the fact that Bing Crosby was 51 years old and he was matched up with a 26-year-old Rosemary Clooney, which likely wouldn't happen today either. And the kids in the final scene? Where in the world did they come from? They were absent the whole movie, but front and center when it came time for the final scene. Frankly, this whole movie is a train wreck. It's an empty-headed script with classic catchy tunes, and it's visually stunning even by today's standards. And none of it, boys and girls, has a thing to do with Christmas.
How dare you enter the Grinch's lair! The impudence! The audacity! The unmitigated gall! You've called down the thunder. Now get ready for the boom! Gaze into the face of fear.
Booga booga!
Mr. Grinch, my name is Cindy Lou Who.
You see, even now the terror is welling up inside you.
I'm not scared.
Denial is to be expected in the face of pure evil.
I am, in a general sense, very much a fan of Ron Howard's movies. The Da Vinci Code, Apollo 13, you know, generally, Beautiful Mind. I've liked his movies, except for this year 2000 adaptation of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And maybe it's because I'm a child of the 1960s and I grew up watching the classic and simple animated version of The Grinch. Or maybe it's just because I can't handle Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was everything wrong with this Grinch movie. Well, that and the fact that the movie looks like it was shot indoors in a dark hole the whole time. Whoville, in my mind, was never that dark. But that's a small point. There is a trend in Christmas movies that in order for it to be a good movie these days, it has to be embellished in some way. They did that not only with this movie, but also with Polar Express and the 2009 animated version of A Christmas Carol, which also sadly featured the truly awful Jim Carrey. Now, I know I'm not surprising anyone about this because when the movie came out, I wrote a review way back in the year 2000 that didn't have much nice to say about this movie, and here's the simple deal with it. The Grinch I knew was made for all ages. Ron Howard's Grinch and Jim Carrey's Grinch was simply made for snarky teenagers and young people, and that's it. It just missed entirely the heart and soul of the message. The sets are good, the music's great, and even at times Max the dog hits exactly the right note. But the whole backstory of Grinch as a kid was never part of the original story, and it gave kind of a weird vibe to the whole movie. Now, I know we're trying to deepen the character of Grinch with that and with everything that Jim Carrey did and to make him more sympathetic, but it just didn't work for me. I felt that once we all left the theater, we all needed counseling. Well, this movie's 20 years old now. Can you believe it? It's noted for all the money it made at the box office, but you know what I find incredible about it? The movie is not really whispered as a classic. Seriously. People stream it from time to time. Maybe it sells a few more DVDs, but is it a tradition? Are podcasters talking about it like they are, say, Home Alone? See, I told you so.
Are you enjoying the view?
You are very good at decorating that tree.
Why are you messing with me? Did Krumpa put you up to this?
I'm not messing with you. It's just nice to meet another human who shares my affinity for elf culture.
I'm just trying to get through the holiday.
Get through? Christmas is the greatest day in the whole wide world!
Please stop talking to me.
Uh-oh. Sounds like someone needs to sing a Christmas carol.
No way.
Best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Thanks, but I don't sing.
Oh, it's easy. It's just like talking, except louder and longer, and you move your voice up and down.
I can sing, but I just choose not to sing. Especially in front of other people.
Well, if you sing alone, you can sing in front of other people. There's no difference.
Actually, there's a big difference.
No, there isn't. Wait. I'm singing! I'm in a store and I'm singing! I'm in a store and I'm singing!
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Yes, there is!
Since I'm on a roll here and ticking everyone off with my take on classic Christmas movies, I might as well offend my children. When Elf came out in 2004, my kids wanted to see that movie like nothing else. They were totally sold on the premise and on the imagery as it was sold in the trailer. Well, and I was too. I thought it was going to be the classic of our time. And for many people it is. Elf remains the most iconic Christmas movie of this century, and we're now two decades into it. I think that's a huge statement to make, both about that movie in particular and about the overall state of Christmas movies today. Consider this. Between the end of World War II and when White Christmas came out in 1954, a period of about 9 years, more or less, we had so many different films that are considered classics now that came out. There was a classic version of A Christmas Carol that came out, I think, in 1951. There was Miracle on 34th Street, The Bishop's Wife, It's a Wonderful Life, The Bells of St. Mary's, It Happened on Fifth Avenue, and The Lemon Drop Kid, all of them produced, all of them considered Christmas classics in even one little way or another. And what have we got so far in the 21st century? Two whole decades of time in this century. Well, we've got Elf, a visually stunning and creatively inventive view of the North Pole. And there's no denying it. Unlike The Grinch, this movie has gone on to become a Christmas classic. It is a definitive, gotta watch every year staple of Christmas. Now, my children, all of them now adults, several of them with children of their own, demand that Elf is at least running on the TV when they come over on Christmas Eve to get all the tastes of home. For them, it's part of their growing up, and it has to be a part of their Christmas. And that's fine. I get it. But I'm not afraid to say it. This beloved Christmas movie actually really sucks. And I hardly know where to begin in explaining why. First of all, Will Ferrell crawled out of the same swamp that Jim Carrey did. Yes, they are two very different comedians, but at the end of the day, that's all that they are. Very few comedians can make that leap to acting, and Will Ferrell is Larry the Cable Guy at the end of the day when it comes to acting. The movie is intended to be light, and I get that too. Will Ferrell, or at least Buddy the Elf, is intended to be funny, and I get that, but come on. This story is kind of pathetic. Buddy is abandoned by his father, and when he seeks him out, his father turns out to be a very, very bad person. And of course, at the center of this whole mix-up in the story of Buddy is Ed Asner, who has to rank amongst the worst Santas ever on film. Out of all the casting in this film, I thought Asner was the worst. Santa Claus is a jolly person. He's a problem solver. He's positive. But an elf Santa's kind of a boob. He's dull. He's lacking in any kind of emotion, and he looks like he's in constant pain, which he probably was. Now, I'm a bit defensive about Santa, you know that. But there was not much to like about Santa Lou Grant. In fact, Lou Grant would have been fine as Santa if he showed up. But just like we were stuck with the sophomoric Will Ferrell, we got stuck with the sour Ed Asner, and not Lou Grant. Then there's this relationship thing between Buddy and Jovi. Buddy is irritating to the entire world, but somehow he ends up with the girl. And at first, she's full of snark and really pissed as he catches her in the shower. But the fact that they sing Baby It's Cold Outside just completes the creep factor for a generation who loves this film but can't see the irony of a nearly two-decade-old film now of their generation mimicking the Christmas outrages of today. I think it's hilarious. They can't stand that song on the radio, but they see it in the movie Elf and they think it's funny. I don't hate Elf. I just merely tolerate it. My Christmas can live without it every year.
To my big brother George, the richest man in town.
Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. That's right.
Attaboy, Clarence.
Now don't worry, I'm not going to diss It's a Wonderful Life, but I am going to stop here. And do not think for a second that this is the end of my list of classic Christmas movies that suck. There are a lot more. But before I carry on and turn this into a series of podcasts, let's just see if you actually want to hear any more from me about it. I have my doubts. I would say in my own defense here that sprinkled throughout the entirety of our entire podcast library are plenty of references to Christmas films that I believe are great, and that actually contribute to a good traditional celebration of Christmas. I would just end here on one note. Christmas movies at the end of the day are great or not great because they reach us through their ability to tell us a good story and to send a Christmas message. I was shocked many years ago to read modern day academics who are critical, even now, of Charles Dickens. There are literary experts out there today who are actually resentful of the respect that Dickens receives for A Christmas Carol. Evidently, everything that a writer is not supposed to do, Dickens did. They are critical of his structure in the story and of his dialogue. They are entirely baffled as to why the buying Christmas-loving public continues to shower Dickens with praise and even fame. What makes Dickens successful is his great ability to touch the heart. It is interesting to note that in the history of movie making with A Christmas Carol, there have been more flops and duds of that story than there have been successful versions that people actually watch year after year. Think about it. Why do you think that's true? After all, it's the same story. But some versions you can see every year and some you can't see more than once. Filmmaking's different. Actors interpret characters that are created by writers, and they build a bond with the audience. Music is added to a movie soundtrack, an element that stirs us. And of course, the visuals of it all have to fit. It takes a lot of things that create the magic that's in movies, Christmas or otherwise. I think we call movies like White Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, or Elf great because they come along during a time and a season in our lives for whatever reason means something, and they're part of it. They send a message. They mark the time. They're safe. Christmas is in a league by itself when it comes to the stuff of pop culture. I'm talking movies or music here. They get a pass. They get, for whatever reason, judged by a different standard. Maybe this is why there are so many podcasts out there about Christmas movies, and maybe that's why Hallmark's formula for Christmas movie making, you know, draws so many viewers year after year after year. Hollywood's tried to apply its usual recipes for movies to Christmas stuff. And that's why we end up with Christmas debris like Bad Santa or Office Christmas Party. They may fit the world, but they don't fit Christmas. Putting Christmas into a movie is not an automatic thing. Those making the movies need to have Christmas in themselves. And that is why I think movies that would otherwise get overlooked become some of the classics of Christmas, even if they're bad. Elf never would have been a hit if it wasn't about Christmas. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, in my opinion, never would have been a hit either if it didn't lean on a nearly 40-year history of it already being part of Christmas. White Christmas the movie is absolutely nothing without White Christmas the song. Strip the Christmas from these movies and they're utterly useless. Think about that in context with It's a Wonderful Life. In most ways, It's a Wonderful Life is kind of like Die Hard. It's not really a Christmas movie. In fact, both Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart said that when they were making It's a Wonderful Life, they didn't think they were making a Christmas movie. And guess what? The audiences of 1946 kind of gave It's a Wonderful Life the cold shoulder. But here we are now, about to celebrate the 75th anniversary of It's a Wonderful Life next year, and it's now considered the number one inspirational film of all time and the most popular Christmas movie ever made. Evidently, It's a Wonderful Life has just enough Christmas in it to create that magic. Join us at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we continue unabated in our conversations of Christmas movies. It never gets old, and we appreciate every opinion and every podcast that touches on the subject. For all of us at MyMerryChristmas.com, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.